space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Hello, Prodigy.
And yeah, we're here to talk about the finale of season two of Prodigy, hopefully not the series finale. We're going to keep banging that drum that, you know, maybe it's not the end. But if it is, then it's going out on a high.
I was working out, if this is the end of it, It's had 10 episodes more than Picard.
Yeah, true.
It'll only be 10 episodes short of what Lower Decks is getting. So it's not actually, if you look at how many episodes they give him, Star Trek, it's not that far behind.
No, it's not.
We'll get into it, you know, obviously as we go on, but it's like, I think just the completeness of the story, like if this is just a two series arc, and given the fact that we had, the first series was in two parts, so effectively over 2 years anyway, like if I'm
wrong, not fat.
We had the lockdown break. So like we've been with these characters for so long and we've taken them on, you know, even if there is another series, this is one complete journey and that's, really well done and nailed the ending, the landing. Again, I don't want to preempt what we're going to talk about, but fucking hell, you can't say Ferret if this is it, you know.
if this is it, they've not left us hanging. It's been rich,
everything on the table. Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, we'll get into it then. So this is Ouroboros parts 1 and 2. And I was such a big fan. Look, I had an Ouroboros tattooed on my arm years ago because I knew this episode were coming.
Let me just show you my Ouroboros tramp stamp. No, sorry, I can't get into the camera.
Hold on. There was some Trek news.
What's that?
There was some Trek news. Before we even see Strange New Decks season 3, they've already signed up for season 4.
Strange New Worlds. We knew that.
I was like, which one?
Sorry, Strange New Worlds. Yeah.
Oh no, just checking. I was like,
that was that crossover. The crossover episode was Strange New Decks.
I would love that as a name as well. That actually is better than
Scientist. Strange New Decks would have been good, yeah.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I did think that we should let people know that we are definitely getting a season 4.
I thought we already knew that, but maybe not. I can't keep track.
It's one of those that has been definitely signed off. Because you know how there's all the sale of CBS and all that going on. What is happening? So this is now definitely signed off. We are getting season 4.
Good. But yeah, we'll go.
They did say before, there's been no announcement about this upcoming series of Strange New Worlds with another crossover. But they said before, they kind of teased that they'd love to do another crossover again. So maybe through that we might get to see the
That would be pretty cool. So anyway, Prodigy finale then, Ouroboros part 1. And we're picking up where we've left off, really, with all everything going on Solum. And
can I start with a question there?
Sorry?
Can I start off with a question on that
you
first
thing? You can start off with a question.
So the first thing that... the woman who's a maniacal villain who's taken
over.
Essentia. First thing she does is start opening wormholes, yeah?
Yeah.
Is that to bring reinforcements from her timeline?
No, I think so that the Langoliers could come and kill everybody.
Wants to get the Langoliers through. It's only relevant because the way they resolve it, which I'll get into in a minute, kind of like, yeah, okay, thank you. Sorry, I'll bank that for when we get to the bit.
That was my understanding, but...
Yeah. I just wanted to check, because if it was a portal to her timeline, that would have made more sense of something later on, which I'm thinking wrong. no matter what, this was a perfect ending. But like, there's one bit which I just want to get you guys weighing when we
interesting
get that was relevant to it. Thank you.
So yeah, she's not happy. Basically, there's an uprising, and they only want peace.
Yeah,
like they want
how fucking dare they want peace?
I know.
This is just. I mean, not only, as Elliot said last week, is this a great echo of the Dominion War right at the end on Cardassia, but also there were so many real-world situations and very current topical ones, like it always matters to, even if it records like years, months, or whatever it's been since this was recorded. It's amazing how it still ends up being something topical to the news at the moment. And this like really strikes a chord with the stuff happening in Israel and kind of Netanyahu wanting to continue war to stay in power, that kind of echoes her being out of touch with the people, like, and what they want. And it's it never ceases to blow my mind how prescient Star Trek always is with things happening around the world anyway, even if they aren't at boiling point at that time.
But is it Star Trek being prescient, or is it the world just being a shithouse? That's the...
Or is it the world's mimicking Star Trek again?
Ah, all I'm saying is, what do you think? I was going to say, I was wondering if Kim's point was Netanyahu, huge Trek fan, so he was like, right, I'm going to do that. No, I was just... I mean, out of all the shithouse versions of the world, though, they picked this storyline, which ties it. Like, there's so many shithouse things which we've had over the last few years.
This is true. This is true.
And they picked that one. Like, when they were first storyboarding it, the shithouse things which were happening in the world were different to the shithouse things.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So this is when she starts opening up all the rifts and everything, and... Wesley gets really excited because he thinks, well, this is the chance now we've got to fix everything. So that's setting up what we're going to be doing over the next two episodes and how we're going to wrap up the whole season and everything.
Although basically Wesley does say at one point, yes, brilliant. She's done that. So it's all happening how I wanted to. It's like, so basically the things where they were separated for a minute didn't make any difference. Oh my God, I don't know what's happening. Then later on it's like, oh yeah, this is as I planned it.
Yeah, going to say like the other week, the whole thing was, I can't see what's going on. I don't know.
So I feel like the solution should have been different to what he expected because of that. Otherwise it
means
just meant nothing. Like basically that, it's a minor gripe, but
it was just like a sort of half an hour where he couldn't see what's going on. It's kind of like if you were walking through a straight tunnel, and you were walking forward and someone put a blindfold on you for 2 minutes and you went, oh shit, I don't know where I'm going. And then they take the blindfold off and you go, oh, I'm still walking through the straight tunnel in a straight line. Though there is a thing, apparently, though, if you're blindfolded and you walk long enough, you will start walking in a circle. Something to do with gravity and the inner ear and stuff like that.
Yeah, and one of your legs is shorter than the other.
So just in case anyone's going to, like, at me and say, no, actually, you'd eventually start walking in. I'm talking about a fairly short tunnel where that effect wouldn't kick in the amount of time that you were blindfolded.
Next to you, so he's staring you anyway. So the fact that you can't see doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, that's what we're getting at, basically. we're going a very long route for this metaphor. But anyway, sorry, don't at me saying it was a simile, not a metaphor. I did say it's like, so therefore it's a simile.
So I'm watching just like keeps on writing tweets and like just before
that's it,
and and they just left it deleted again.
I'm just knocking them out of the park as they come through, which is a baseball metaphor, and that was a metaphor. Anyway, Rock comes up with the plan then, which is we're going to... I'll see if I've got this right. They're going to stabilize the time wormholes.
They're going to stabilize an unstable wormhole.
Right.
And merge them, isn't it?
Where does the time wormhole come in? So I've definitely written down time wormhole.
It's really complicated because what they work out is that Chakotay never actually went back to, what's the planet called?
Yeah,
Transamar. That they actually sent the protostar backwards.
But they haven't worked that out yet. That's a bit later. At this stage, as I remember it, they...
Here they're trying to thread... Here what they've decided they're going to do is they're going to thread all the wormholes together.
Yes.
To be able to sort of merge them together to be able to go through.
Yeah. And it's later on they find out exactly as you say that...
Yeah.
The original wormhole's out there, so they've just got to find that one. But I do love some of the dialogue here. It's just wonderful. It's like... Rock not only getting so enthusiastic and talking techno babble like it, it's just wonderful. Then you've got Majel going, it's like, yes, as easy as that, basically. It's like, that's just a trillion to one. And then Zero's going, it's like finding a needle in a haystack through a quantum telescope halfway across the universe. And like, it's just lovely.
Yeah, it is really good.
But I do want to point out, though, what is really nice about this with time travel, because let's bear in mind, this is Voyager 2, Season 8 of Voyager, it's been called almost.
Yeah.
And this is a time episode that they don't reset to the beginning at the end of it as if nothing happened. They actually solved the time paradox.
Only do they do every form of time travel ever imagined in Star Trek in this show, but they don't undo any of it. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, they actually solve it.
And I think just put my comm badge on. I realized I wasn't wearing it. The thing I may as well bring in here as well. So they do that. Wesley and Rock and they work out basically that the original wormhole is still active and still out there, so they can use that. They then postulate that they're going to go back and solve it. Wesley says, because like as long as you get the broad strokes right, I'm paraphrasing, but as long as you get the broad strokes, time doesn't matter. Now, go on.
It's you don't have to have the minute details, like you don't have to have my mouse was there in it.
Yeah.
You have to have I'm in this room on this podcast now.
Great.
It's a great way to describe it. You don't have to have the minute details of I've got this next to me and that next to me. It's the big thing that is important.
Okay. Yes.
So my thing is, and again, it's a minor kind of gripe, but in the beginning of Prodigy, when they go on the protostar and they, over the course of the episodes, find the video footage, it's from the original timeline where the Birdman dies and Chakotay, and they've now changed it so events happen differently. So that video footage, surely that's a big thing they need to be
not at all because that video footage that we saw at the start of season one is what we saw when they went through the wormhole and found Chakotay.
One of the bits we see Birdman die and that we see him talking like being strapped, like there's bits
but we see Birdman get wounded, don't we, in season two when they go forward, so it's sort of like being covered, so they've sort of gone, right, there's the footage from season one that we've done, but we have to sort of like, they've played about a bit, so they've sort of like done it like the Protostar crew, the Prodigy crew, are there with him on Solum.
Yeah.
You know, in like episode one or two, is it episode two where they went forward in the time?
Yeah. Trip?
So we see that happen, that where we see Chakotay outside the Protostar as if he's off to be forced onto it and stuff. But that doesn't actually happen. So it doesn't negate what we saw in season one. They've just sort of altered it slightly.
Some of that comes from Janeway's memory, which she won't have those memories anymore.
Yeah, but...
I'm not trying to... Like, I find that really interesting. I want to rewatch now and see if they do.
Yeah, but I think it comes down to that. The details don't matter as long as the broad strokes are there.
But one of the broad strokes is surely getting that information from her memory to move. So that isn't like the mouse being not there, because that isn't relevant to what they're doing.
Yeah.
Relevant to what they're doing is getting those memories from her. Again, it's just... It's nerdy. Also, I'm having fun with this. I'm not...
I'd have to go back and rewatch it to see if it actually motivated their action or not.
Yeah, there's also the thing that they do download Janeway into the Doctor's AMH to save her at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's the possibility, like, because she wakes up not knowing what's happened, that they've actually messed about with her memories.
Yeah, That'd be that kind point. Of
so that they've gone, hold on, we need to make sure all this matches as well. Because we have the part at the end where Dell remembers his comm badge that he found on the Protostar at the start. And he leaves that there in little bits.
I mean, then it does become headcanon, but I'm fine with that. But I'm just interested if they did square it within the dialogue, which is there.
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch it.
I was just kind of curious of your take on it, guys. Yeah.
I think that they sort of put that right when they went forward that in the beginning of season two with Jacoti, and he didn't go back on the Protostar when it jumped.
Because sort of my other part of it was the fact that they then...
Oh, he did actually went to elsewhere, didn't he? Because he had to go find him.
Yeah, he did.
So it doesn't negate anything. So Janeway does have the memory of him going on the Protostar from Solum. It's just that he didn't go back to Trey... I can't remember.
Trenzalore.
I can't remember the actual name.
I'm sure it squares up that you see in season one is sort of covered in season two, but there's more that's happened.
It might be that things are a little different.
A bit different, and it's like. Because the other part of it very quickly was that they're going back from the new version of now when they send the Protostar back. So let me keep hold of this because Chakotay's in a different timeline at the beginning of this to everyone else as well, just to complicate things. So when they go back as well, they obviously are finding a way. I think it's because they're using the same wormhole. I think that's what makes this bit work because they go back to the original timeline where I've forgotten her name again, where she's gone back from the future.
Ascensia
and John Noble have gone back in time from their future. How do they go back from that time if they've stopped that? But I think because it's using the same wormhole, they go back to the same version of reality, you know, that coincides together with...
When they actually go back at the end, they use the only wormhole that doesn't have a signature of the Protostar already. Because that's the right one, because it's the first time it's going back.
Because I've got to say that, it's like, for all my questions, because again, I just enjoy it. This is just for fun. This is not nitpicking. Because, I think they've done a great job. For all the different timelines and the different changes to reality, the way they have squared, like they brought in so much and
I'll try to do the timeline of what's happened to the Protostar. Yeah, so Jacoti goes off on the Protostar. It falls through. Right at the start.
Okay.
So Jacoti's on the originally, goes off on the Protostar, and it goes through a wormhole to the future on Solum.
Right.
So that's there. And in an episode, then we have in season two of this, the Prodigy crew come forward in that time ship through the wormhole to Jacoti to rescue him. Jacoti then goes back 10 years in time.
Yes.
To that desert planet where he crashes, that he's been marooned on.
Yeah.
They then bring the Protostar back in current time because it's caught up in time.
Yep.
To meet with Voyager.
Yeah.
Willow's following.
They then send the Protostar at the end of this.
Yeah.
To Tremolore or whatever it's called.
Right.
And then we have the start of season one of Prodigy with the Protostar.
Okay, so it's like that, basically.
But I would add to that, when Jakota's in the future, it's the future where, because he arrives there, there's a war in that future.
He creates the war by arriving.
So when he's taken back, that war never happens because of all the events that go on. Right?
I think.
Leading us to our new reality.
So, I thought I had no, this that, until we had this discussion. Now we're fine.
That war has still happened, but it's now in an alternate reality. It's
which was my point.
We've got the Kelvin verse where the Star Trek movies take place.
Different reality.
Because there was a change in reality when Spock went back on time. We've now also got a proto-universe, a proto-verse from when the Proto Star
or the Chakotay verse. Just because you love
the Chakotay
verse. I didn't want
it's the Chakotay verse.
We've now got a Proto verse where a war happened, but that's not on the main timeline. We're now back on the main timeline without a war.
Right. Yeah, so what
that's my point is when they then travel from this time, if they were just traveling in time, they would surely go to a time at the beginning of everything in Prodigy timeline to when no one comes from the future because that future doesn't exist. So they have to at least do some reality bending in the journey, surely, to have them come back from the future, which now no one resists.
The Protostar does move through time, but it never repeats where it goes.
Yeah, but I think there is some reality shifting because they have to go back to the timeline where those people in the future still exist to go back to them to change it later.
That war is now a pocket universe.
Yeah, but it happens within the Prime Universe where they travel to at the beginning of this.
But it no longer happens in the Prime Universe to put the Prime Universe right. But it's now happened
in... For them to meet Sensu in the first place, it's got to happen. For them to meet Sensu and John Noble, it's got to...
No, because the Sensu is... Sensu's all right. It's the real Sensu, the younger Sensu. It's older Sensu.
No, I'm saying, yeah. So that's what I mean. Right. Older Sensu and old John Noble...
Yeah, they come back
in time from the dark future, we'll say.
They do come back in time, but that war where they came from is now in a separate universe.
I know, and that's what I'm saying, though. It's like when they go back to the beginning of it all at the end of this episode, there has to have been a link to that future. At that present, that future still present.
Well, it's...
They send them from the where their future doesn't happen to the present where their future does happen.
I forget the name of the specific paradox, but it's one of them where there's no actual origin point to it all.
Yeah.
Because there can't be. But anyway, back in the Prime Universe then.
But that was great. Thanks, guys.
Do we all understand what happened with the time travel now? Have I explained?
Not at all.
It was the Chakotay verse. Yeah, that was it.
I'm happy with the Chakotay verse because as long as I don't live in it.
And it doesn't happen anymore, so you should celebrate that.
Yeah, exactly. But what does happen is we have to get to the top of the spire in order to do it. Rose says, I think Quantum Leap happened.
Everything was put right in the end, and we're happy with that. And everything wasn't reset to the beginning as if nothing had happened, which is a typical Voyager time travel. Quantum Leap is probably closer.
Yeah, would probably have worked better in this instance, given how complicated we've just made it. But anyway, we have to get to the top of the spire. And this is where the beginning of what I think is an homage, or maybe is an inspiration, or whatever. But the season 5 finale of Buffy... where Glory's trying to sacrifice Dawn at the top of a spire, and they have to get to the top of the spire to prevent it. This reminds me of that, and there's another moment coming up which I think is very much from Buffy as well. So I think there's some writers on this who are fans of Buffy, but we'll get to the other moment anyway. But
you're probably right, because I think writers of sci-fi probably enjoy sci-fi, so they will
exactly know what
piece of the universe is.
And if I could throw in a couple other elements, it also sort of reminded me of the space platform from Star Trek 2009, which is a trope term later on in Star Trek already. And also the bit in Generations where Kirk's got to get to the controller.
Like, yes. The idea that you have to get to something to do something is... Yeah. But visually, it just reminded me very much of that episode of Buffy, and there's something else coming up that I'll point out when we get there. But then I think we pretty much get confirmation of something that we speculated on, because Hollow Janeway's chatting with Chakotay, and she says, oh, well, you know, what'll happen? You know, what'll happen about our memories of our time together?
I thought she was hot for the Doctor. I don't think Hollow Janeway was interested.
I'm not saying she was into him, but I think Chakotay was in charge on that planet and he could have reprogrammed her.
I'm just going to say, I think Hollow Janeway definitely has the hots for the Doctor. No doubt about it. But there is only Hollow Janeway and Chakotay on that planet.
Exactly.
So she did it. She had very limited options. There wasn't even a monkey there.
Exactly. And that's so why
she literally had no choice. There was no monkey.
But she could have just programmed herself with a memory of sex. Like, she can do that. Like, she doesn't have to worry about it. It's him who, like, has he got any other holodeck access, or is the ship completely dead?
No, but he don't want holodeck access. He's got a hollow version of Janeway. That's all he's ever wanted.
Yeah, and there's no monkey to get in his way this
exactly.
time.
He's well happy as Chakotay. Anyway, so yeah, this is when they realize that they might have created the original wormhole and all the paradoxical stuff that comes with it. But it means that they could potentially fix it all. And we get underway with the mission, and we get another fight between Essentia and Gwyn, which is cool.
Well, this is where Rock realizes that we have to find the middle point. And it's basically shows every wormhole with an that's got a echo of the protostar, and they've got that up already, and then it's go. Then it's the one that hasn't got an echo of the protostar, is the one they have to thread through.
We've gone past, but I kind of just very quickly want to shout out. It's when Rock, she's beaming them all down, and she goes, I love you guys.
That's lovely.
That's the only Star Trek where this would fit seamlessly and be lovely. But it melted my heart. It did.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And it is just testament to these characters and how well they've drawn them.
Yeah.
And how fond of them we are. Boom. I'll pretend I did that on purpose.
Oh, totally.
So Essentia and Gwyn have another fight. Dal's got to climb to the top. Murph and Dreadnought have a fight.
Oh,
Murph is really cool.
Murph is brilliant.
This also backs up my theory from the other week that when the timeline looks like it's solidifying in their favor, Gwyn seems to be more solid. It's never called out in dialogue, but she's really solid. And then when she starts losing the fight, that's when she starts fading. Because even Cynthia says, it's like, oh, you're looking a bit more solid than, you know, you have been or something like that.
Yeah.
It really is all that. I wonder if earlier scripts had that in, but it's just so tightly packed. They had to just go, look, it's apparent in the, you know, in what's happening.
It's probably one of them things that, now you've heard it sort of in episode 19 about how she's solid when things are going right in the fixing the time.
Oh, did they say in the dialogue?
No, because what you get from Essentia saying that you're more solid because things are going right. But they don't mention it ever about like, and I'm agreeing with what you say. If you go back and watch it now, and you'll see when things are going right, she won't be flickering. But when things are going wrong,
that's why I said a few weeks ago. I did spot it. I think it's very clever. I like the fact that there's so much in here. They've gone, look, on X, Y, and Z. We're just going to trust a few because
exactly.
And it's one of them clever things where it keeps like this is a kids show that you meant to watch as a family. But there's so many more levels to it that you can watch as an adult and get so much out of it. So cleverly.
Definitely.
Can you imagine little kids working out how that time travel worked?
I can't imagine me working it out now.
He's leaking out of his ear trying to think about it.
I'm just thinking, actually, back then, to be honest with you, if it was us three, probably we would have been going, it's like, oh, because that's like this isn't like the time travel in the last series. This is a different one. Like, I feel like we would have had the goods on this.
Yeah.
We were giggling their kids, and we didn't have anything else to distract us.
Yeah, that's
at most.
But I think it's really clever because it's there. You can watch it as a kid and go, yeah, that makes sense how it's working. But when you really start to think about what they're doing, you go, oh, man, it's gone all over the place.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. I know kids, like some kids are like sponges still, but I think the average nerds when we were kids, as I say, we had time to think about this because there was so little nerd catering for us.
Oh, that's it.
Bits we could cling on to. We spent ages thinking. We watched them so many times. Now they've got so much stuff, which I like, great. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing. I hate when people go, say, oh, kids don't appreciate. No, they've got their own shit. But back then, we had so much time with nothing else. So we had that because it's all we had.
Yeah, you could just sit there and read your Star Trek encyclopedia. You know, you had time to really deep dive into stuff, whereas it's kind of like, I'm all with the metaphors today, or similes again. But, you have more of a buffet now in terms of what we can get off the internet and everything, whereas we were much more a set menu. You know, we had a show that was on at a certain time every week.
And then we had
supporting material, but we couldn't just Google everything. And
like we had kids' TV, which arguably started at 3:30 till half 5, maybe 6:15. But 3:30 till 4:00 was for really young kids, and it was proper baby-fied TV that you didn't want to watch. And then there might be ITV and BBC both have a drama, and you pick which one you watched.
Yeah.
Your favorite cartoons. Blue Pete would be 2 or 3 times a week, so the same show. There wasn't huge amounts of content. And when you think how little time you actually had of TV, and now you've got dedicated cartoon channels and all sorts.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the other Buffy thing. While Gwyn and Essencia are fighting, Essencia like swings the sword and Gwyn catches it between her hands, which exactly the same thing happens in the season two finale of Buffy when Buffy's fighting Angelus, and that's sort of how that fight culminates. So I feel like that's another. I mean, it's been done in other things as well, but it just that. Coupled with the quest to get to the top of the tower, it gave me very end of a season of Buffy vibes. Did this, so I'm calling it that they were Buffy fans.
I think you could be right.
So, Sean was destroyed because of Essentias,
yes, but only in the proto universe,
right?
Not in the main universe anymore. The Protoverse.
I mean, I would say...
I refuse to call it the Jacotiverse.
Well, but if you think about it, it got deleted. Surely you want that.
Jacotiverse,
and it got deleted.
Okay. It can be the Jacotiverse because it was deleted.
No, I'm honestly, keep Chakotay in a pocket universe. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah, you just saw it got back before it got deleted.
Too right. Anyway, then...
I was just going to add to that. I just love... are we going into the people up?
No, go on. Yes, yeah. Yeah. So, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's so lovely in Star Trek. I feel like it, with all the kind of bad news around the world of countries which are, like, in so much shit, just the idea of people uprising, and that throughout history has made a huge difference when just the people rebel.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's a coup to get rid of a despot and stuff. And I love Star Trek doing this. And again, it just somehow feels so in step and so hopeful in time when we've got so much around the world to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek, thank you once again for kind of making me feel a bit better that, you know, maybe the people.
Yeah. And you do get this lovely moment where they sort of all give the power to Gwyn.
Yeah.
And it's everybody coming together and it's incredibly uplifting. It's just a fantastic sequence.
Can we all recommend?
Can we all go back to Murph's fight though?
Yeah.
Just quickly, I just recommend if you are watching this and the end bits of this episode of these episodes, don't do it between the canteen at work and the bus home unless you want to be, well, and if you're like me, you will be blubbing like a baby in those scenes, and it's like trying not to on the bus. It's like, oh!
That is an incredibly moving sequence where they all...
You
have my power,
Yeah.
Sensations say traitors.
Oh, I just got my little Star Trek heart.
Like, did she die at the end of that? You know, when she goes grey? Is that, has she had everything drained from her back from the heirloom because it's completely rejected her?
I don't think she died, did she? I'm not sure.
I don't know, because she goes completely grey and blank and drops to her knees, and then we don't see anything else of her.
Maybe it's just left to a bit of interpretation. Yeah. I don't know.
I forget which character it was. I'm sure it was one of the characters in Enterprise where they, it was slightly oblique if they died or not. It was some Star Trek. And I remember they said, the producers had said, it's like, if they get another series, then they're just in like, you know, coma or whatever. If they don't, they're dead. Oh, it was then. No, it was in Babylon 5, sorry, way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, with Cole, wasn't it? The guy who was in love with the Russian woman. Anyway, the producer said, he said in an interview, the producers said to him that, like, they weren't doing anything with his thing for the next series, but if it gone on, like, it's possible they might have revealed that he was in a coma and not dead.
Yeah, they put him in, like, a deep storage thing or something, didn't they? Yeah, I remember that.
Like that. It's like, if it gets more series, they might decide, because they've been a bit oblique about that she did live or die.
You still had Young Essentia, so it doesn't matter. Young Essentia's still alive. It's like the old one is gone.
And I don't think you need to kill her, because she is resoundingly defeated, which is the point this, that the people come together to get rid of her.
It sort of shows that they're completely grey.
But I think it leads you...
But it's that where she goes completely grey, her eyes went blank, and she drops to her knees, and then you don't see anything else of her. So, like, was she arrested and tried and thrown in prison? Or has she just died because the heirlooms completely rejected her?
And it's also a nice thing to, like, say if there are future series, like, you want to bring back a hand from the grave, kind of like a baddie from the past. It's nice to bring him for an episode or two.
Wait a minute.
I did want to...
I did want
to mention Murph, though, with his fight.
Yeah, Murph's cool.
I think, like, you see him, he's fighting, and then you think he's lost it, and he's falling, and he gives a smile to Pug as he goes down into energy thing, and you think, oh, no, that's it. And then the head comes up of,
Dreadnought.
Dreadnought. And it's just Murph with a trophy.
They do kind of stage it as though it's going to be a heroic sacrifice, don't they?
Yeah.
But thankfully they don't kill off Murph, so we're all right with that.
I was thinking, is Murph virtually indestructible?
I think so.
I think it's been applied a few times that, he's difficult.
But we're at the end, we're only at the end of episode one, and the main baddie's defeated. Oh, no, wait, the Langoliers are here, so the story's not over.
This is a masterclass in how to land a show. So you've got your villain at the end of the last two episodes in a position of weakness, so you've kind of got to round up her story, which they do really well. You've got the second story to land, which we're going to, about the protester, and the third story about where your character's going in the future. And they give so much great service to all three of them.
They do,
Team Rush. It doesn't feel like you end one to get to the next. They're quite woven together nicely as well. It's just really nice.
Well, realistically, they used episode 17 and 18. This was a four-part finale. And though it isn't called, because it should have probably been called Robust, say, 1, 2, 3, and 4, but it isn't. But I think that's why when it has come to the final two episodes, it doesn't feel rushed when you time things up, because they've done
So yeah, yeah, they've done all the groundwork for it. I wonder,
like, I mean, to give them even extra credit, like, you know, this Roboris is a two-parter, sort of works as, I know you have to watch the other ones, but it is its own story, but it works as a wider story. That's really lovely. You've got the fact that, like, I don't know if you guys ever watched the Flash in the Arrowverse, I think it was called.
Some of it.
You know, from CW in America.
I've got
the end of that was really awful. Like, it wasn't great towards the last series, but with that and Supergirl in the same kind of universe, they wrapped everything up before the show was ended, and it was just, it was so kind of like meandering near the end and just and just sickly sweet. It just they
well, Supergirl, they had to wrap up because she got pregnant, so the
yeah, but it's like they kind of wrapped up the storyline with the baddie halfway through that episode. And yeah, the other half of the episode was her just kicking about, deciding what to do in the future. And like, she decides to just tell everyone she's Supergirl, which it was just so meandering and so shit. And
spoilers for the Arrowverse.
Oh, yeah, fuck it. Sorry, spoilers for it. Sorry, they spoiled it, so I don't have
to. I did watch all Supergirl.
But there was a bit like, you know, it was like where halfway through the episode, she'd empowered everyone so much. They didn't need Supergirl, but maybe they did because she's going to be honest about being her. It was just all wishy-washy shit.
Yeah,
you needed the baddie to still be there and much later in the episode. Whereas this one, you don't feel the absence of the baddie because you still have the storyline with.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty going on.
The story of where they're landing.
Beating Essentia was just part of the.
Yeah, but it would seem like that's happening too early. But then you've got all this other stuff. That's why it's
We've got the Langoliers, which they have to sort of negotiate the way through.
I tell you, there's a nice little touch here, and I don't know if you picked up on it, and it's just after Gwyn wins the fight, and they open the wormhole, and Pog looks up and he's. And people looking up and they're going, oh, isn't that a lovely sight? Doesn't she look beautiful? And Dal's looking down with his binoculars at Gwen and he's going, yes, she does.
Oh, yeah, that's so sweet. So sweet.
That is sweet.
It's lovely, yeah.
And you get a really nice moment from Wesley where, you know, they say, oh, so is this why we had to be together? He's like, oh, no, that's, you know, what. I'm talking about something in the future. And yeah, it sets up this idea that this crew is going to do amazing things, which hopefully we will get to see them do, Netflix.
And I do feel, though, that this is done so that it can go either way. So that if we see all those wonderful things, it's great. But the fact they said that, it almost, if it ends here, you know that they were brought together to be this, what they are, and that they're going to do wonderful things. Even if you don't see them, you know that's going to happen.
That's it. They can become, they can sort of pass into legend after we've finished spending our time with them. It works on that level, yeah.
Do you think it was in Stargate SG-1 when O'Neill was put in Deep Freeze? No, that wasn't the one I was referring to, but thank you. I know the bit you mean.
I know what you mean.
I think she's referring to me saying about the
The Babylon 5.
I think it was Babylon 5. I could be wrong. It was something like that. It was where a character was ambiguously killed or not.
No, you were right.
It was another story.
O'Neill was put in a deep freeze, but to save him, and but they did get him out some that episode or the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And continuing this idea, you know, we had all the people coming together to help Gwyn. We get, like, all the crew coming together to the point that Gillian the Whale is the one who actually navigates them through it. And it's this incredibly heroic moment for a whale. You know, it's incredible that the show pulls it off.
They're going through wormhole. They've got phases going and they're running out of power. And it's like, put your faith in cetacean ops. This is why you've got them here, because they're so good.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Let me add to that as well. It's like, it would have been a fine thing to just have that whale there as a sort of comedy beat, which they've used it for. You know, they've used Gillian. She's got a name. They've used Gillian for that. And that would have been enough. You could have just assumed that at some point, somehow, she does some work as well. This shows how she works. Like, just the image of the whale going through the different through the wormholes. Like it just looks great. It looks great. It looks it like some being doing a job. And that's very Star Trek to have, like, not, you know, especially in Star Trek's evolved. Like, not, and even in the original series, you had like cloud based kind of being. So not every life form has to be humanoid looking. It's great.
I just like it. Like it's turned the helm over to Cetacean Ops to get us through.
They can make the course corrections quick enough.
Yeah, it's great. It's brilliant. And what a little weird sequel to Star Trek 4.
Without the time travel of Star Trek 4, this timeline would be ruined. But then
so with the finale of Picard as well.
And so we get the protostar where it's supposed to be, and then we get this awesome montage where I wonder if they put this in after the fact, actually thinking it might be the end. Like it's almost like
I think it was needed here, though.
How I got this was because you see a lot of Gwen in it, looking at Gwen with all this flashback. And I think it said the timeline being put right, which is sort of solidifying Gwen in it.
Maybe.
And this is where Gwen's sort of temporal disruption is off these
things. Yeah.
And also you've got the, it's just, I think this is needed because whether this is, we hope not. We're still banging that drum. We hope Netflix will get the shit together and commission more. However, if this is the end as opposed to the end of the beginning, like either way, even if it was a two series arc to begin this show in earnest going forward, I think this was a perfect wrap up to that.
Yeah, it was. Journey.
There's only two series journey they've gone on, even if you get more. I think this is what you needed to wrap it up to.
Left no loose threads.
Yeah. And just there is that moment where he goes, and puts down the comm badge.
Yeah.
His friends. And just that's the bit where I can start losing it on the back. It's like, looks like I should just wait till I go home. I know it'd be rushed for time, but it wouldn't be worth it.
And then we get, like, wrapping up some of the other, like, character stories. So Wesley finally goes and sees his mum.
Yeah, which, that was nice.
It was nice to see that.
And let's be fair with Wesley. Wesley can jump about in time all over.
There's
no reason that he had to have left it this many years.
No, I believe that whatever way he perceives time, the way he was saying it was like there's always something happening with reality, with time, with
everything else.
It
has to be urgent to him from the dialogue he said, which kind of squares that circle, because like you say, that's the thing which I've heard it many times over the years, like, why doesn't Wesley just pop back? He could pop back yesterday, he could do it all the time. Why do we never see him again? And this kind of answers that, and it's such a lovely moment because and I think it ties into the fact that he spent some time. Not only did Janeway kind of guilt trip him, which is lovely, but you know, because as a captain, you feel like she, and an admiral, she is a mother to all these people under her command. But also, you've got this thing of Wesley was made sort of mortal again at the beginning, like a few episodes ago, whatever. And I think that ties in. So I think that moment of remembering what it's like to be mortal led him to make this decision to come back when he gets his power back. It's subtextual, but
I don't think he's ever been immortal. I think he's always been mortal.
I'm using as a general term. I'm
linear,
not saying
linear rather than
linear. I was just using it as a general term.
He's not linear.
I didn't mean to imply, but he's lost his powers for a while.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he became what he used to be, and I think that combined with Janeway's words, but I believe that's what leads to this moment, and that's really nice. And it's like, it's, and then he's kind of getting teary. It's like, I don't know how long I can stay, but I there's always something happening with us, but I just want to see mum, you know. It's like, and he gets to see Jack without the meme.
Jack, which is a cool little cameo,
because the fact that they never really mentioned Wesley in Picard was one of the few things I felt was a kind of missed opportunity in that last series. They didn't mention
it. Yeah, I mean, well, very briefly, very she says something like, I lost one son to
he's never mentioned in relation to Jack, which is kind of weird. Like, they never, Jack never goes like, oh, I had a brother, like, I never got to, like, they, and this gives you that moment, you know, it's just, it's really nice. It's literally that one meet together.
Chakotay becomes the captain.
Sorry, very quickly, just the kid voice up, going, hey, hoy, what's your name?
It's just, yeah.
It's like, oh, it's like such a sucker punch, but it got me like a bitch. It was great.
And Chakotay becomes the captain of Voyager. We can skip over that. which, and, I do like that, because that happens in the books, and I always like it when they bring non-canonical things and they find a way of making them canon. So, yeah, I've no issue with that, really.
In this timeline, every ship gets its own uniform, so he's still in that uniform as opposed to what we see.
And
in,
our crew starts the academy properly, but at just the wrong time, because this is when the Mars attacks from Picard take place. I like how we've brought it to a place in the timeline that we're familiar with.
It's a
fair way before. Yeah,
this is what, kind of flashback, but it's like 20 years before.
Yeah, this is what caused Picard to leave Starfleet, and that's alluded to here.
Well, Admiral Jericho says, don't they?
Yeah, Picard, he's not happy about
Picard
it.
Picard didn't take it very well.
Now, just remind us, before we go into whatever happens in the next few scenes, I can't remember. So Jericho says that Admiral Picard was none too pleased about it. And as we know, he quit Starfleet for 20 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cries like a bitch and doesn't act like the Picard we know. I can't remember. What does Janeway do, I wonder, in the next scene? Like, this is what Picard should have done. He should have stayed in the game.
She retires and goes to live on a vineyard.
Then she comes back to put them in space to get...
Okay, she does come back, yes.
Yeah, she does what she needs to do. Picard should have done... Like, I would love it. If there is more, I would love them to weave Picard in just in cameos. As kind of mentor. Even if he's retired, he's doing the right thing, I'd like to see.
Yeah, what a quiet... To fight against it, you need to be in there to be able to fight
exactly.
Because literally just walked away and let them do what they wanted.
Because in the same way, I think they've used moments within this series and other Star Treks to save and justify and recontextualize moments, like they did with Star Wars, with a lot of the stuff from the prequel trilogy. They kind of recontextualized and made it better from what they've added to it. I think they can do that with Picard if they get another series. If they got him to cameo, I think it'd be great.
Yeah,
I think
I'm sure
Patrick Stewart would be so upset in the sound studio, like wherever he's based. You know,
I do like that it adds, like, in Picard season one, we do get a flashback and it's Picard and Raffi. And Picard comes out of this meeting that we're told about here. And I like now that they've made canon that meeting actually involved Jellico. And now, so we can imagine how it went. Yeah, it just adds a little bit more flavour to something we've already seen.
Actually,
Picard particularly said, like, fuck you, I'm out. Jellico's trying to tell me what to do.
No, Picard should have no qualms with Jellico, because Picard was sent on the mission in Chain of Command. Is it Chain of Command?
Yeah.
He was sent on Chain of Command by Starfleet, and Jericho went on to take over the Enterprise. So Enterprise crew who didn't go on the mission with Picard, fair enough, can be a bit pissed with Jericho because he wanted to alter the ship rotations, which Riker is a complete dickhead of a first officer for arguing with his captain when he wants to change your rotor system.
Yeah, could have handled
because that's the sort of thing that happens all the time. In business, etc.
We've got to do this, but Jellicoe was a dick about it as well. But
no, it was a dick to the crew on the Enterprise, in a way. Yeah
but anyway, we will not re-legislate them.
But he was responsible for rescuing Picard.
Ah, but you're saying that Picard would have no gripe. I think Picard came back to the ship, saw he'd fucked up his
Picard
crew.
Picard is off to think how he was saved by Jericho.
Sorry?
Picard's view of Jericho is Jericho saved me from torture where I was succumbing to the torture. I was off to give in.
I know.
Because he admits that at the end.
But what I'm saying to you is he then got back to the ship. He was going, oh, Jericho, thank God he rescued me. Fucking 5 shift rotation. Fuck you. Right. He is never getting on my ship again. He fucked
there
up.
There you go. And that's it.
And do you know how many complaints he got through that job because people lost childcare opportunities? Like,
let's face it. Troy never wanted to go back to having to wear the bunny suit. She sucked her uniform.
She alternated. But yeah, maybe that's what pushed Picard over the edge. Like, he had this meeting with Jellicoe and he said, right, we're abandoning the evacuation of Romulus. We're scaling back the exploration arm of Starfleet, and Picard's like, oh, I don't like it, but okay. And then he's like, and we're going to 5 shift rotations there. And Picard just like, that's it, I am done. That's it. You can, I was with you.
Was it going through a four shift rotation instead of a three shift rotation?
Yeah, basically. Jellicoe wanted to give people more downtime, and Riker weren't happy about it.
It might have been more. Shorter shifts, but more of them. We don't know about how that structure works. So
no, four shift rotation means you've got 6 hours on.
What I'm saying is, though, if you might be hours overlapping, we don't know how that broke down. So it might have been they end up working more shifts shorter, which people prefer.
Anyway, we know it pushed Picard over the edge. Anyway.
And I like the idea that, like, Picard goes out of the meeting, tells Raffi the bad news, they get straight onto his communicator. It's like, Riker, he's going to 5 shifts again. I'm not standing for this bullshit. No, you fucking shouldn't as well.
Four shifts.
Yeah. There are four shifts. Are you sure you don't see 5? Anyway.
We're jumping on that joke as quick as we can.
So, So the ending we get then is that Janeway has got them field commissions as ensigns. And the Protostar class is now a thing. And the first one is going to be called the USS Prodigy, which is great.
How perfect is that? It's perfect. It's just beautiful. Like, again, if you end it here, great. If not, they're on the Prodigy.
Exactly.
So, but it is. It's like Janeway has fought. Exploration is too important.
Yeah.
You guys are too important to just be thrust into what they're doing after what you have done.
And it also plays into
I've created this new branch that's going to be basically.
Plays into exactly what I've said before, which is the fact that they've had it so that there's always a reason why it makes sense why these young first of all, not Starfleet, then they're cadets, and now they're kind of field promotion ensigns. But they always find a good reason why it makes sense for them to be still sent out by Starfleet. And in this case, Starfleet have given up on exploration. They got the ship, which is, they've kind of established. I mean, it's a bit of a flange that couldn't be used for anything else, but okay. Like it's a powerful fast ship, which they could still use to protect. But anyway, we'll ignore that. It is only usable for exploration. So there's a good reason to use them. And then I'm retiring anyway. So just let me have this. And
the idea is beautiful that Janeway thinks, you know, these kids are worthy to be entrusted to carry on the exploration that Starfleet does. There's something very affirming in that she chooses to bestow that responsibility and that honor upon them. It's great.
There's a really interesting part of this as well, where we've got Starfleet as coming very cellular into itself. And all through Picard, we never don't see much exploration. We don't know if it's happening. We get an impression that the Enterprise G is off exploring at the end, but not a lot of other things. And when we go to Discovery Season 3, we find Starfleet, it's very much just in on itself, protecting itself, not exploring.
Yeah, I saw that echo too. And also, I kind of wondered as well, is there maybe a thing which Janeway played a move here. Like, it's total headcanon, but I just like the idea that she'd already put in papers to retire. And then when this crisis arose, perhaps knowing that she'd ruffle the feathers of Jellicoe and others in Starfleet, maybe she threatened to take back her resignation. Or, you let me do this with these guys, and I will...
Yeah, maybe.
Because they couldn't... I get the feeling she's done enough to be a pain in the ass of Starfleet Command. And if she returned at a time when they were talking against going in the stars, I think she would have been even more of a pain in the ass for them. But if she'd offered to take back a resignation, I think they would be hard-pressed to say, oh, no, we're not going to take that.
Well, it says they were all being recalled.
But I think they didn't want to. So that gave her an excuse not to take her, but give her what she wanted. I think that would be...
What I'm really annoyed about is that we didn't get to see anybody in a disco suit when they were recalled.
Why do we get it? It still annoys me they got another new uniform on the USS Prodigy, whereas they just showed them... They were kick-ass, those uniforms which they're wearing at Starfleet Command. They look great.
To sell toys, which they're not making, but never mind.
That's it. If they're making toys, I get it. But, like, there's 100 different
uniforms. The only people that they're helping is the Chinese market, who are pretty much the only people who are pumping uniforms out.
Exactly.
True, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then to wrap it all up, we get the moment Fidal, who cedes the captaincy to Gwyn. And that completes his arc for the whole season, which is great.
And we've seen this coming and all that.
Yeah.
But it is nice that he's the one who says it, and you're the captain.
Yeah.
And the way the maturity which he shows, which he has been shown not to have previously, is like, Chakotay, he represents the past. like, I have to go, no, there were people who came before me, like Chakotay, and people who come up to me, like you. And I will be here as your first officer. I mean, it's a bit arrogant for not to say, if you'll take me. It's like, no, I'm going to be your number one. You don't get a choice about that. But we'll forgive that.
No, it's brilliant. And then, of course, Gwyn gets engage catchphrase, which is, let's reach the stars, which I'm
really sorry I haven't put a bloody...
That's okay.
I didn't even realize that was meant to be her thing. I'm just
I think it is. It's meant to be a line.
If there is, I'd rather her say whatever she's going to say, but I'm so glad they didn't have to have a moment going, it's like, hey, are you going to say your thing? What's going to be your thing? It's like,
I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it's a nice cap to the series, and we see the Prodigy blasting off into space. Yeah. I think this gives Picard season 3 a run for its money as one of the best seasons of Star Trek ever.
I still think last episode of Picard is the most perfect ending I've ever seen.
But as a series, as you said,
this wasn't made as a season finale, but if it is a season finale,
pretty fucking
well
good.
And that, like you say, for a whole series, it's so up there, the story.
Yeah.
Can I just thank the writers and producers of this show, actors, everyone, for what they did. Was for the first time since, I'd say, probably Enterprise, I think, was the last time we really saw Star Trek, which was purely written for families to be able to sit down and enjoy. And even though I'm not watching it with the family, I've missed that Star Trek experience of it just being a kind of like, it's not sweary, it's not adult, it's just a show about adventure. And that's what I got from this. This reminded me of watching as a kid. I got that experience, and I'm so thankful. And please don't let this be the last Star Trek that is a family show. I think Academy is probably going to be teen, kind of like, you know, a young adult. And you've got all these other ones aimed at these different markets. Don't lose the sight of the original market.
No, we need to keep that.
It's like it's so nice that they don't think it's necessary to drop an F-bomb.
Yes.
And that. And
it's like, so forced and not needed as well.
We need to be adults, so let's have F-bombs. It's like, no. We've seen Patrick Stewart in, four movies and seven seasons, and he's never felt it necessary to effing blind anybody.
Yeah, I don't think Picard would have been that much different if you got rid of this role. Strange New Worlds, apart from the fact they love to do one episode a year, which is a nod to Aliens, and have the Gorners basically aliens and have swearing all over the place. Apart from that, most of the episodes really wouldn't be missing the swearing if they got rid of it.
No, don't
do it for the sake of it. Like, if there is, again, that's what Lower Decks need to speak. It needs to be adult, it needs to be sweary. It's piss-taking in its nature. That's fine. It's fine to do other things, but don't lose sight of
what you want.
Mission.
And we would very much welcome more Prodigy.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap it up there then. We're not sure what we're doing next week.
I tell you what, anybody on the Facebook group, I'll post up Facebook group straight after. If anyone has a couple of episodes would like us to talk about that we haven't covered previously.
Yeah, we'll do it.
But not Fairhaven or the other
Facebook,
because we have a plan for them.
And again, a reminder, we've already done all the post-Enterprise new Treks.
Modern Trek has already been done.
Yeah, but fire it out there if there's anything you want to see us do. And speaking of the Facebook group, we're at RetrekPod on Twitter. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and you can also find us on YouTube. Elliot's got Retrek Model Studios there.
I'm just signing my contract for a new house, so... At this exact moment in time, I have not got a model studio because it's in 9, 10, 11, 12, 15 boxes.
we'll let you off just this once.
So there might be a delay on any new content on the model studios for probably a month or so.
Fair enough. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on with the Dr. Squee show?
Well, again, I am deep in rehearsals, ready for the play, which I'm going to be in. If anyone happens to be in the Southampton area, please come see Blue Remembered Hills near the end of the month. You can get your tickets from Maskers Theatre. Anyway, but what me and Jim have got going on, soon, next week at some point, we're going to record the first episode of the kind of mini little series we're going to do, looking back at Twin Peaks for Halloween. I usually do a Halloween special for the Dr. Squee show. Instead, we're just going to cover like Twin Peaks.
Instead of Shocktober doing a different horror movie every night.
It's not Shocktober, it's Orktober.
Right, well...
Sure.
Yes. Quite. So instead of doing that, what we're going to try and do is watch all of season 1 and 2 of Twin Peaks in October.
And the return at some point and the movies.
And the return and the movie at some point. The idea is there are 30 episodes in season 1 and 2 of Twin Peaks. So that gives us one day off if we keep up the pace of one episode a day. So
the idea is, we'll do season one's 8 episodes. So we're going to do that as one and then 2 parts for season 2.
That's the plan. So yes, that's what we're doing.
YouTube.com/Dr. Squee or our Facebook page.
And thanks for trekking with us this time, and we'll see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you.
Make it go fast and drag off.
Fascinating.